You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 10th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Fox News Ebola kissing booth.
Wah, wah, wah. Kissy, kissy, kiss, kiss.
It's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. Yeah.
Mwah, mwah, mwah.
Oh, God.
They're just God. Disgusting me. All right.
And you could see it coming. I mean, you could see it coming.
Yeah. You could write it.
Well, I'm sure someone has. It's like Christmas. Oh, a scandal? A plague? One of the horsemen of the apocalypse?
How can we blame Barack Obama for that?
It's like fucking clockwork. And it's weird watching them sort of do it in real time, trying to... They're spinning this Rubik's Cube of scandal and adjectives and Africanness, trying to find the right pieces to click into place so that their audience can go, we knew it all along.
Yeah.
Oh, and they're not quite there yet. But they know there must be some secret combination of words that will make their audience cream in their pants.
But it does now totally explain to me why Congress is on vacation.
Yeah.
Because if they had to be in town during a time when we all know that they cut funding for the CDC and they refused to hire the Surgeon General, you know, to confirm the Surgeon General. And basically, they got nothing.
Yeah.
And they're depending, their hero, Rick Perry, is depending on the federal government to solve this problem.
And his magic
glass. And the only people that can do it are a well-funded program from the federal government. They're toast. And I just want to mention, Driftglass, the Lone Star Tick.
Yeah.
Which is being completely ignored by Fox News.
The Lone Star Tick, what's that, Blue Gal?
It's a bug.
Oh, it's a bug.
Probably a bug that came over from the Mexican border, I imagine, as Fox News would say.
Oh, sorry. I thought it was like the Albert or the Herbert Lom.
No, the tick.
That you get if you're a liberal living in Texas and you just fucking had it. But I guess not.
No, we have some wonderful listeners in Texas.
Yeah, we do. Well, I feel sorry for them.
We love them. We love them. They feel sorry for them, too.
Yeah.
I was thinking Lone Star Dick. No, that's Governor Perry.
Yeah.
But the Lone Star Tick is an actual insect that having a real problem with because when it bites you, it apparently the chemical reaction that your body has makes you allergic to meat, like beef and chicken and pork.
And yourself?
No, apparently not. Apparently it's a stomach virus reaction of some sort.
Okay.
But it's unlike Ebola, which regrettably has killed one person in Dallas. This tick bite has sent over 200 people to the hospital after eating something as simple as a cheeseburger just because they got a bug bite.
You would think that
this would be covered.
Well, an outbreak of something that makes you allergic to beef in Texas
would be a big deal.
Would be a really big deal, but I guess not. Maybe are they coming over the border? Are they dressed as little tiny immigrants?
Do they have Muslim prayer shawls that they leave at the border? No. So they're, since it's just a bug bite, even though it's apparently affecting hundreds of people, it's not news on the Fox News.
Well, it's not panicable.
There's no way to translate it into, oh my God, why isn't Barack Obama doing something?
Well, it's not from Africa.
Yeah,
or
right?
A scary place like that. It doesn't involve your government. It doesn't involve something scary like plague.
And MSNBC had that whole Central Park concert series, which was to raise money for the very unglamorous cause of creating toilets for people in high poverty countries.
Yeah.
Which is going to reduce the disease spreading ability.
Yeah. It's one of those simple things you can do.
Yes.
That makes it
more people have cell phones in the world than have toilets. And we need to do something about that. And there are people doing something about that in the world, including the country of Norway, which is extremely generous and is raising tons of money, giving tons of money to help poor countries have toilets. That's what they're using their oil money for. You'd think.
Yeah.
You know, what we do if a country has oil is find a way to militarize our reaction to what's happening.
Yeah. Yep.
And if it's Africa, which has no oil, we either ignore the problem completely or treat it as a threat which we can hang on the president. That's my point.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, remember what the mayor of Amity said in Jaws? You know, you say barracuda, people say, what? What's that?
Yeah.
You say shark.
Yeah.
And you've got a panic on your hands.
Yeah.
You say Ebola. Yeah, fuck ticks, man. So what about ticks?
Yeah.
You say Ebola, and you've got a nice monetizable stampede that you can run towards the polling place on election day of people who were scared out of their wits because Fox News idiots scaring them. And one of these days, I know we do a long list of shows we should ought to do, but I would like to sit down with my lovely wife and go through all the stories that have been discarded like empty artillery shells by the Fox News idiots because they've outlived their usefulness.
Oh, yeah.
They're no longer the deficit.
The deficit is the one that comes immediately to mind.
It went away.
Yeah.
What about all those children on the border who are sneaking nuclear weapons and disease into our country because something that I haven't heard a word about that. And they've lost their political utility.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they've lost their urgency or their inherent importance or lack of importance. It's that they have lost. Roger Ailes got bored with them. They chewed all the flavor out of them. And now they have to move on to the next thing to scare the crap out of the lunatic old people who now those are the Fox Newsicans, right?
Well, yeah, but you know what? I want to say something about older people who watch Hannity or watch Fox and believe what's being said. Mm-hmm. And it came to me this week to not forgive them for their lack of discernment, but have a little more sympathy for the fact that they grew up on Huntley and Brinkley.
Sure. Yeah.
And they grew up on Walter Cronkite.
Yep.
And you and I remember that from our childhood.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
We're the last generation to remember when news was nonprofit.
And three networks.
And three networks. And news was half an hour and that's all you got.
Uh-huh.
And people who had that habit since childhood 30 years earlier than we did, or 20 years earlier than we did, you know, they turn on. And I mean, I had an uncle who turned on Glenn Beck and said, I'm going to watch the news.
Yeah. Yep.
And I have a certain amount of sympathy for the fact that the viewer didn't change. It's the product that changed dramatically. And nobody told anyone, look, we're not doing this to inform you anymore.
We're here to make you,
we're here to make you scared. We're here to influence your behavior.
We're here to make you stupid.
Yeah.
We're here to make you dumber. And I would respectfully disagree with my lovely wife. There are all kinds of people who have been telling them, this imaginary older relative, that this is what's being done to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to believe it.
Yeah.
So they're not going to believe it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how many times you show them and how many times you debunk it and how many times you walk them through it and how many times you show all the shit they were wrong about. Doesn't matter. They're not going to. They're the nice old lady who got conned by that kid from the bank. And they're not about to go to the police because it would show them. They would show them up to be the chumps, the caricature of a dumb white trash moron who believes bigots that everyone in the liberal press has made them out to be.
And if they just keep turning on Fox News, they'll be told, you know, you're not going to hear this anywhere else. That's why you're smart, because you're listening to Fox.
And
it's going to be totally reinforced.
And
with call girls pouting.
and the ones who do sort of achieve a measure of escape velocity, the more sophisticated non-Fox conservatives, the more David Brooksian conservative, the ones who really do want to look at the problem from a practical point of view, they're the ones who prop that tent up with their approach. And I ran across this very brief article by Michael Gerson.
Yes. Talk about that.
So Michael Gerson, if you don't know him, he was a Republican speechwriter. He wrote speeches for George W. Bush. So he worked for the bad guys. And he's a wordsmith. He puts words together for a living. That's what he does. And he has all kinds. He's sort of the pinch hit backup David Brooks. He looks like a dork on television. But they put him on because he's respectable. He's a respectable Republican. And he does what all respectable Republicans do, which is they identify the problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They identify the symptom. In this case, Michael Gerson really would like people to shut up and stop panic peddling and start listening to medical professionals. He said that, you know, there's
really?
Yeah. American.
That's interesting.
America does not have an Ebola outbreak, which is extremely unlikely in a health system capable of basic public health measures. So no infection, but no outbreak. So, right. That's great. Right. That's perfectly reasonable advice. So what does he contend the problem is? The problem is, and I quote Michael Gerson, some in the media splice their own agendas into the Ebola virus, have used this response variously to criticize government doublespeak, diagnose institutional rot, or slam immigration laxity. This is political and ideological scavenging. It also pits people with limited credibility on this issue against national experts who actually know their business. There's a time to question authority, and then there's a time to shut up and listen to carefully to medical experts who sometimes say complex and difficult things. What's the key phrase in that sentence there? Some in the media.
Some, yes.
Some in the media. No, Michael Gerson, Republicans in the media. Republicans on television. Republicans, conservatives, your people, your tribe, Michael Gerson, they're the only ones who are panic peddling. It's not everybody. It's not some unidentifiable group floating out in the ether. It's your fucking tribe. But you can't say that or you get fired.
Yep.
So instead of Republicans are the problem, Republicans are a virus, Republicans are panic peddling vultures who will do anything to scare the shit out of you to vote for them so that they can further fuck this country back into the dark ages. Michael Gerson just casually floats away on a little cloud of some in the media. And that's the two-pronged approach. The first half is the real straightforward Fox News, Barack Obama's a Kenyan monster who's out to destroy you and make your kids gay. Very straightforward. But they cannot exist without Michael Gerson in the press pretending that there's not a distinctly identifiable group that is the problem. That it's just some people out there. It's just a bunch of folks who are behaving
irresponsibly. Some people say.
Maybe it's everybody. Maybe it's both sides. And so without Michael Gerson running his form of prostitution at the front of the house, the Fox Newsicans would never get away with the shit they're doing in the back of the house.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's a complex synergy they have between them. And I know the two groups don't like each other, but they both have one thing in common. They really, really don't want to talk about the fact that the problem with this country is the Republican Party is broken.
Yep.
And they both
cannot talk about that.
They cannot talk about it. So that just jumped right out at me. I didn't think anyone else in the media would report that.
Well, speaking of that, I really want to congratulate the Republican Party on their women outreach this week.
It's spectacular.
Republicans are people. It turns out Republicans are a bunch of stock photos.
Yeah.
Of actors who might be Democrats. You never know.
Very attractive stock photos. Yes.
Yeah, they're attractive stock voters. Okay, moving right along. Get out and vote. Yeah. Apparently, we haven't said that enough. Mm-hmm. We've heard from people saying, you know, don't suppress the vote.
Yeah.
And
apparently, we're not real clear on this subject sometimes. So, here's what we would like you to do. On election day, go to the polls and vote for Democrats.
Yes, thank you.
Now,
vote for Democrats and support the president, okay?
If you have people around you who can't get to the polls, who don't want to go to the polls, who are iffy about, I don't know, I've got a nail appointment, drive them to the polls. Mm-hmm. If they're lacking in information about all the wonderful things that Democrats have done for them, or the fact that if you keep electing Republicans, you're screwed, supply them with that information. And now here's where I would allow some flexibility in this. At the very local level, if you're voting for mayor or water reclamation district or whatever, and you've got two or three candidates, and you know what? The person who's you think, because you know him personally, would be really good as city clerk, also happens to be a libertarian. Go ahead and vote for the libertarian. Go ahead and vote for the Green Party candidate. Go ahead and vote for anybody you think would be an awesome local elected official, truly local elected official. But at the national level, and the stakes are too high and the race is too close to give Republicans anything.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you like the mayor of your town and the mayor of your town is a labor socialist or a libertarian, vote for them. Go forth. God bless. Have a great time. Nobody's going to hold it against you. But at the national level, you really got to get out. And if you have to hold your nose to vote Democratic, go ahead and do it.
Yep.
But if you sit on your ass,
please vote.
It went. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to suppress the vote at all.
Well, that makes you a Democrat because apparently I was just listening to the Rachel Maddow show.
Mm-hmm.
And the General Accounting Office did a study of places because, as you know, because of low voter turnout, a bunch of lunatics got into office in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of lunatics got in at the state legislature level.
Yes.
By the way, when I said vote for the best candidate locally, I don't mean a crazy motherfucker.
You mean a teabagger.
I don't mean a teabagger. I mean a responsible person whose political affiliation is secondary to their sense of public mission. But no, in 2010, we elected a bunch of lunatics at the state level. And they proceeded to shovel through as fast as possible as many laws restricting voting as possible. And you know what? The GAO did this. It was so incredibly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know, this is a brief aside for our listeners. I don't know if you've noticed this among your conservative friends or colleagues. Mm-hmm. But nobody even mentions voting fraud anymore.
No.
They never even mention because they know it's bullshit. They know you know it's bullshit. They don't even discuss it anymore. I know they have their talking points down about why do you need to restrict – why do you have voting ID? Well, you know, if fraud in the election, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's fine. But what does that have to do with cutting off voting on Sunday or early voting, which is all part of the same package? And there's no answer to that because the whole Republican agenda is they know they're a dying minority. And there's still parts of this country they haven't screwed into the ground. So they really need to hold on to power for a little bit longer, which means they need to suppress the vote. And it turns out that's what they've done. The General Accounting Office did a study of all the draconian voter ID and other restrictions that Republicans put in place. And it turns out, yep, the places where those laws went into effect, voting turnout went down. So now, exhausted.
And it went down among blacks and students more than anybody else. Yep.
So all of you exhausted, pissed off, they've had enough. 10 years ago, we saw this coming, and we've been fighting this fight forever, haven't we? I mean, this has just been a really long-ass fight, and it doesn't seem to be getting any mm-hmm. better. Your job just got harder, because now you have to vote against the tide. Now you have to get people out to vote who Republicans don't want to vote, and maybe they put laws in place. So you have to push extra hard this time. And sorry, but that's your job. And as Super Chicken said, you knew the job was dangerous when you took it. So get out there and vote.
I have some good news, though, Driftglass. Some news in the world of racial progress that I want to report.
I'm sorry. What I meant to say was this is good news.
Well, exactly.
Because if you get out and vote, they'll lose.
Yeah, they will.
The issues are on our side. The numbers are on our side. If you get out and vote on Election Day, we'll win. But it's a matter of you really have to do it. You have to get out. You have to.
Yeah. And you might have. Here's the problem. You might have to wait 2 hours to vote.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. They want it to be as hard as possible for the multitudes to vote because they
figured
lose.
Of compared to the people who fought and died to give me this right.
Yep.
Asking
you're doing
me to
all
wait
right.
Extra 30
yep.
minutes is not exactly a burden.
And people that got hit, children that got hit with fire hoses. Mm-hmm. So African Americans can vote. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is really exciting news. According to USA Today, which I don't always turn to as a source for statistics, but in this instance, I will.
Maybe you're staying at a motel.
There is a new record that has been broken this election cycle. There are more African American nominees from both major parties running for congressional seats than ever before. 82 African American nominees are running for Congress. That beats the old record of 72, which was set in 2012. of the black candidates running, 64 are Democrats and 18 are Republicans. According to the website The Root, all but three, Joyce Dickerson, who is running as a Democrat in South Carolina, Tim Scott, who's running as a Republican in South Carolina, and Cory Booker, who is running for it's re-election, but he was elected in a special election in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Those three are running for Senate, and the rest are running in the House. So that's really cool.
That's
progress. That is progress. Welcome to progress. Driftglass.
Blue Gal.
I want to talk to you just for a minute about Walmart. I about Walmart a lot, but...
You can't talk for just a minute about Walmart, so...
Well...
The floor is yours.
There's a whole bunch of stuff going on with them cutting back on their expense account for health care for their employees.
Yeah.
And saying, well, it's no big deal because they'll get subsidies on the exchange.
Yeah, because we don't pay them anything.
And we're moochers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's the same as it ever was. The number of Walmart employees that are on food stamps, the number of Walmart employees that are already on Medicaid.
Yeah.
What are those Walmart employees who are eligible for Medicaid and work for Walmart in states where they have an expanded Medicaid going to do? Well, they're going to pay 19% more for their health care if they buy it from Walmart,
yeah,
from their employer.
Mm-hmm.
I also learned today that, and I will post a link to this on our Facebook page and on my website. Walmart loves solar energy for their stores. They put solar panels on the roofs of every store they apparently own. That's something that Bill Clinton likes to point out. But Walmart doesn't love solar unless it's privately held. And they are going to battle against what we are calling the rooftop solar movement, which lets individuals have solar panels on their houses. They are in, Walmart has given money to organizations that are requiring fees to individuals that install those, regular fees, like energy fees, even though it doesn't cost anyone anything once the solar panel's on your house,
yeah,
to generate electricity.
It runs forever.
You're supposed to, they want to charge you a fee for having that on your house.
Yeah, which is so Montgomery Burns.
It is.
It really is. It really is. It's like the only free thing left in the solar system is sunlight. Oh, so let's find a way to screw you out of it. It falls upon the just and unjust alike, you know?
What they've been doing since the 70s is pretending that solar power isn't viable.
Right.
No. Solar power would be great tomorrow. Remember those ads, tomorrow,
sure,
tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
So we're really looking forward to solar power being available tomorrow, but right now you got to keep burning our fuel. You got to keep burning our fossil fuel. But now, since solar is getting cheaper and cheaper by the day,
yeah,
organizations like Walmart are just saying, hey, it's a great idea to have solar on our buildings. But if anybody else wants to take profit away from the private marketplace, they should have to pay us for that.
Yeah, which is obscene. I mean, it's sunlight.
It's
sunlight.
And can we talk about the business owner? In a general way, there's a business owner in Springfield who has been taking advantage of solar power.
Oh, yeah.
And being very green about how he runs his business.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know him. I know you know him. And he has gotten so much free media.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's been and that's part of the deal.
Yeah.
Is
he's the solar guy.
He's the solar guy. He's the garden guy. He's the
garden
guy.
He has a garden for
his. He's the beekeeping guy.
Yeah.
It turns out all of the.
And it is a restaurant. So we should mention it's a restaurant that grows their own food, grows their own honey from a bee, their bee farming.
Yeah.
And also has solar panels. Now, are they 100% powered by solar?
I don't know.
Right. But he's got solar panels on his building, and he owns something, right? So,
and at least part of the solar panel cost was paid for by you, the taxpayer, because it was a grant.
Mm-hmm.
It was this, let's promote solar energy. So part of being an early adopter.
You mean like Solyndra?
Yeah. part of being an early adopter of these things means that you get the press that goes along with it.
Yeah.
And it is.
And it's easy to see why Walmart would want to have good press about being, you know, they also promote good press about providing produce to poor people. And I get that. They provide produce in food deserts to poor people. I get that. The owners of Walmart are scum.
They are absolutely dependent on public subsidies.
Yep.
For everything. And just so you know, there are a lot of small business owners who operate on a very thin margin.
Mm-hmm.
I know several of them. They are right at the razor's edge all the time, trying to get their business up and running, trying to reinvest in their equipment, trying to train their people, trying to hire one more new person, et cetera. So I really do understand when you are operating in the red, when you're burning through your capital, when you're really tight, that you cut and you make sacrifices and you tighten your belt. But as I recall, four of the Walmart heirs are in the top 10 wealthiest human beings in the world, or certainly in America. Each of them has $26 billion under their belt. They can afford to buy really good health care for everyone who works for them and pay them a decent wage. They choose not to. And they choose to make the country, fashion a country in such a way that those people are too poor to shop anyplace else. Their business model is poverty. Their business model is litigiousness. Their business model is destroying the middle class. And yeah, they get rich. And that's wonderful for them. But it sucks for the rest of us. Yeah. And so, yeah, they love solar power just as long as it gets them good press. And they love raising the minimum wage as long as it doesn't go up too high. You know, there's a price point, and every Walmart accountant knows where it is. It's the point beyond which the person who you're now paying a decent wage will not shop at Walmart anymore.
Right.
And they'll go to Target or they'll go to Costco or someplace else. And we don't want to pay people enough to go to leave the company store.
Yeah.
But we're willing to scoop up that little incremental bit of profit, because $26 billion per person is just not quite enough for the Walton family. We need a little bit more. We need to squeeze a little bit more. So those are the people who – those are our robber barons. Those are the people who are going out of the way to wreck this country. And what they did in last week was tell their part-time employees, sorry, go shop on the private market.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness there's an Obamacare out there to catch them when they fall. But of course it shouldn't be that way. It just is. And the reason we need the Affordable Care Act and we need unemployment and we need Medicare and Medicaid is that the people who should be providing those benefits in a healthy, robust economy don't do it anymore.
Yep.
They don't feel it's their responsibility to treat their people as anything other than cattle. So, which leads us to Don Blankenship.
I want to hear more about Don Blankenship. I loved what I want to read what Wonkhead said about it.
Everyone needs to know who Don Blankenship is.
He's the chairman of the
Massey
Energy Company,
the sixth largest coal company in the United States.
Yeah.
And he's an awful, awful person.
And they don't care very much about their employees. They really don't. Speaking of companies that don't care about their employees. The headline at Wonkette was, News nerd Chris Hayes meets match in stack of talking points wearing a skin suit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell me about Chris. He was on Chris Hayes.
He was.
Chris, which means he won.
Yeah, because he
I'm
got,
sorry, he
yeah.
won. He
sorry,
was
Chris.
Interviewed on the set of the Chris Hayes show. He won.
Bless his heart. First of all, Christopher L. Hayes on MSNBC is doing a week-long special on coal.
Yep.
And that's great. That's absolutely great. The one tonight was on two of my favorite subjects, solar power and wind power.
Mm.
Not just the fact that it's being used, not just the fact that it's become cheap enough to displace coal in some places, or the fact that wind is inexhaustible, or the fact that these sort of hard-bitten farmers are turning to the wind as another cash crop and it works. Or the fact that they create manufacturing jobs. And really good manufacturing jobs and inexhaustible manufacturing jobs. And the energy that you generate from this is going to power the next generation of entrepreneurs and so forth. Mm-hmm. It's not going to solve all of our problems, but it's such an easy, virtuous cycle. And it's one of my favorite things to talk about, which is American manufacturing renaissance and the alternate energy, renewable energy being part of that, being a key player in that. So good for Chris Hayes for doing that. But, and here comes the but, having Don Blankenship on, first of all, taught you nothing about anything that you couldn't get if you just compiled every email you've ever gotten from Crazy Uncle Liberty and read them in order. He's just a massive lying, douchebaggy talking points. And, you know, he sat there and said, well, you know, the Clean Energy Bill passed, Clean Energy Act passed, and then 42,000 companies left America, and then 27 million Americans went on food stamps. And Chris Hayes said, really? Really? Basically, you're going to sit there and tell me that the Clean Air Act caused 27 million people to go on food stamps? And this guy didn't bat an eye. Well, I believe in the math, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris has this charmingly naive liberal belief that if he just can find your soul and appeal to your conscience. Don Blankenship doesn't have a conscience. Don Blankenship has a balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And Don Blankenship is going to be long dead before the shit that he has turned loose in the world comes back to bite anybody in an air-conditioned coffin for all eternity. So nothing Chris Hayes was going to say was going to budge him or move him or persuade him. And he just sat there and very calmly recited his talking points and shrugged off this punk who kept trying to appeal to his better nature. He doesn't have a better nature. But the two things I wanted to mention of most interest to me was the fact that Chris Hayes played back the tobacco tapes.
Oh, yeah.
And said, of all these tobacco executives, swearing that it wasn't addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And
wasn't going to kill you. Yes.
And he turned around to Don Blankenship, looked over his glasses, and said in a very Perry Mason-y kind of voice, you know, in 20 years, that's going to be you. How does it feel to know that in 20 years, people are going to look at that and say, what an asshole, basically.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And what Chris has forgotten, which is weird because it happens on his own network all the time, is the concept of the judgment of history is no longer something that conservatives are afraid of. They don't have to be.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Hayes, look back 10 years ago. Look back at Bill Kristol, David Brooks, Paul Wolfowitz. Look back at all the neocons who constructed the war. Look at Dick Cheney. What has history done to them? Has it rendered them powerless? Has it tossed them off the world stage? Has it gotten them fired? Has it cost them a single dollar? Has it cost Fox a single viewer? No, no, no. Not at all. The judgment of history implies that at some point we will fucking well wake up.
Yep.
And
yep.
realize what awful people these were. But it's been 10 goddamn years. It's been, in fact, exactly 10 years since the presidential and vice presidential debates of 2004, when Dick Cheney and George Bush just lied their fucking asses off about how many troops we were going to train in Iraq and how it was all going to be great and how I never even implied that there was any relationship between 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. And thus far, no one has rendered any judgment against them because they're busy writing history. They're busy creating an alternate universe where the judgment of history never intrudes.
Never and reaches the reason, them. And never they can go them. They can go speak with their daughter at the Heritage Foundation and have a happy family moment with their daughter Liz. Yeah.
So the judgment of history would mean something if, frankly, a lot more members of Chris's profession, not you, Chris Hayes, but a lot more members of his profession would actually do their fucking job and judge these people, shame them in public. Drag them out. But everyone from Joe Scarborough to, frankly, Chuck Todd and David Gregory are in the business of making sure that history judgment never lands on these people. These are their friends. History's judgment never lands but lightly on the shoulders of John McCain. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that one of these days you're going to get your comeuppance is a charming delusion. But it only works if you have a referee who's going to throw down the flag eventually and call them out of the game. That referee used to be the Free Press. We don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's sad, but it's true. The second thing that was really interesting to me is if you want to have a really interesting, meaty discussion about this subject, and I think Mr. Hayes really does, instead of inviting walking flatulence like Don Blankenship on this and asking him questions that he's just going to lie about, without batting an eye, because that's what he does for a living, invite your good friend Ben Dominic on the show, Ben Dominic on the show. because Ben Dominic, or Dominic, I'm never sure how you pronounce that name, has been on MSNBC lots of times. He's a friend, obviously a friend of Chris Hayes. They chum it up when they're on the air. Ben is also on with Ezra Klein a lot, or used to be. And the thing about Ben is he works for a place called the Heartland Institute.
He also probably went to college with Chris Hayes. Every time you talk about Ben Dominic and Chris Hayes, mm-hmm. I think of the movie Sideways.
Yeah, I know.
And I think, you know, this Jagoff was my college freshman roommate. Mm-hmm. And therefore, because of the history we have together, you know, it's turning it into a female thing. It's the she held my hair over the toilet while I was barfing.
Yes. I completely understand that.
So I owe him, you know, a pass on being with Team Evil. And frankly, I think he understands, Chris Hayes' friend understands the rules of how you behave on a Chris Hayes show.
Yes.
And he, you know, pushes the conservative viewpoint without being a talking point from crazy Uncle Liberty.
Except that's who's paying his
But that's who's paying his bills, yes.
And the Heartland Institute is centered in Chicago, located in Chicago. I'm quite familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
Started off as a tobacco apologist shop. Very much like this is why it was so perfect, because Chris Hayes started off with the tobacco industry. This is a parallel I have made dozens of times on my own blog, because it's exactly the same cycle. It's, you know, there is nothing wrong with our product. There's some controversy about whether or not there is anything wrong with our product. Let's teach the controversy.
Yes.
Then the next phase is, oh, it's not even about our product. It's about freedom. Let's not talk about science. Let's talk about freedom. And the final phase is, well, it's too late anyway. You're going to die anyway.
Yes,
so why not enjoy yourself on the way?
With a
Chesterfield on the way to the funeral. And it's exactly the same cycle. And it's a libertarian scam. It's a libertarian front group that takes money from big tobacco. Or used to take money from big tobacco. And who do they take money from now? They take money from oil. They take money from energy. They're one of the very best climate change denial shops out there, which I know bothers Chris Hayes all to pieces. So if you really wanted to have a meaty discussion on the air about these issues with someone who isn't just going to fucking lie to you, but who you know, apparently you respect, put a camera in front of you two and start asking, look, Ben, I know you and I get along really well, but you're being paid by one of the leading climate change denial shops in the world. Now, if you feel you're putting him on the spot, if you're putting him in an unfair position, guess what, Chris? You lose. If you feel that this is such an important issue that you have to devote an entire week of specials to it, and I agree that you do, that you should bend every oar, you should spare no expense, you should absolutely put this at the front of the argument. But when it comes to your friend, we'll cut you some slack. We're not going to hold your feet to the fire. We're not going to bring up this very unpleasant, uncomfortable subject because this is where your friend draws a paycheck.
Yeah.
Then you know what? You're one of them now.
Yep. Yep.
And that's fine. You do a lot of other wonderful things. But I think it would be a much better show if you had someone on that was thoughtful and you could ask, look, you work at Climate Change Denial Central.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about what the world is going to be like for our kids, if I'm right. I think it'll be a wonderful discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
And keep doing good work, Chris. I do appreciate the work you do. I know you listen to the podcast.
I appreciate him so much. Yeah. Yeah.
And I really do wish you'd go back to Saturday mornings because
and we could have our family together again.
I know. It was
the uppers, the uppers hashtag. I do miss the Saturday morning.
I don't really watch Steve Kornacki anymore. It's horse race politics. It's Meet the Press Junior, and it's just awful.
Oh, we have it on. I mean, we have it on, but yeah, a lot of the time it's just, okay, he's going to talk about Chris Christie, and we just mute it, because, yeah, okay. he's got his obsessive interests, and so do we.
He does.
And they don't overlap.
He does, but stick with manufacturing, and stick with alternate energy, and good job. Overall, a really, really well-done performance, really well-done shows this week, but... remember who you're debating against. Remember that they're not susceptible to your pleas for conscience and comity anymore because they've left those behind. So now what do you do? That's a really much more interesting discussion. Once you've embraced the fact these people are perfectly comfortable being evil and perfectly comfortable destroying the future, then what do you do? And that's a much more interesting and much more kind of provocative discussion to have. And I'd love to hear that someday.
Speaking of provocative discussions.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck and Bill Maher were... Now, I don't really want to get into this because Bill Maher just has this weak spot, which is based on how he was raised. I'm absolutely convinced. I'm not going to... I've spent a lot of time... I've spent much more time psychoanalyzing Bill Maher than is good for me. I will say that.
But it boiled down to Bill Maher essentially making the argument... I'm not going to attribute it directly to him, but essentially making the argument that Islam is wired to be violent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in their nature. And liberals have to get over the fact that we keep making an argument about the moderate practitioners of Islam, and I'm sure they're the majority, but they don't seem to be doing much. They don't seem to be taking a stand. They don't seem to be stepping up. They don't seem to be bringing their religion under control. There seem to be a whole lot of groups that are sprouting up and branching out and affiliating and splintering that are doing really atrocious, barbaric things, and much of the rest of the Muslim world is very busy worrying about America and Israel and other things and don't really want to bring them under control or can't. At least that was his observation. I'm probably grossly misrepresenting it. And Ben Affleck was saying, fuck you, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very interesting back and forth. Michael Tomasky weighed in. He's another writer, weighed in with, you know, there's something to this Islam as it is manifesting itself right now, seems to be really violent and not able to control itself. But the larger argument has been going back and forth about, but what about Christianity? Christianity has a pretty violent history. And I was listening to the Stephanie Miller show this morning, and Chris Lavoie, by the way, I should be on the Stephanie Miller show. Just a little bit of a plug. You've got Bob Seska, the Rude Pundit, Charlie Pierce, but you don't have me. And really, you're missing the fourth king. So you really do need to have me on that show. I can hold my own. I can talk reasonably intelligently on the fly.
You can talk on Skype or on the phone.
Uh-huh. And I'm right in your wheelhouse. And I have a voice that doesn't scare children over the radio. So, and I know when to shut up, as is not necessarily evidenced by the way I'm talking now, but I really do know how to do that. So that's been my plug to go on the Stephanie Miller show. But aside from that, the producer, Chris Lavoie, was having some argument that was based on this debate. This is an argument among people who have nothing better to argue about, because none of them is going to change any of the players in this. This is just a high school or college theological argument people are having in the dorm room. Yes. But it affects how people see the world, and it affects how the filters that they use to perceive religion generally and specific religions and how they act. And Chris Lavoie dipped all the way back to the Crusades. Oh, isn't it awful? Christians were bloody back then, and so on and so forth. And it occurred to me that we always skip over this really big, violent, expansionist, terrorist Christian group whenever we're having this discussion, called the Klan.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Isn't it weird? And I don't mean the Klan. I mean the Klan specifically, but I also mean the entire history of how the Klan came to be, mm-hmm. what became of it. There's this discussion, this silly argument going on at the Andrew Sullivan's place, where he invokes the late Chris Hitchens to tell us liberals about Islam and totalitarianism. Because really, what's better than being lectured on Islam by Andrew Sullivan? What could possibly make your day more than that? Goddamn liberals need to listen up. And the idea that, well, some people say that Christianity sort of broke its violent fever after the 30 Years War was over. And some people say it was not until after World War I when all the Christian emperors all died in a conflagration that nearly destroyed Western civilization. First of all, that's going to come as a real shock to all of my ancestors in Ireland who were killing each other over religion up until the 90s. But secondly, Andrew Sullivan lives in this country, and Bill Maher lives in this country. Ben Affleck lives here, too. And most of the people engaged in this argument are privileged Westerners who live in the United States. And yet nobody points out the fact that the Klan was a religious, and is, to the extent that it still exists, a religious organization. That it grew out of a confederacy that was explicitly bound together by a theological view of the universe that said white men are superior to everyone else. And anyone
who's chosen by God to rule the world. Absolutely.
And we are allowed to enslave people on that basis. We are allowed to murder people on that basis. We are allowed to publicly execute people. We don't behead them, but we sure as hell hang them. And we hang them in public, and we hang them in public for exactly the same reason.
ISIS hang them from a tree people. For looking the wrong way at you.
Right.
Yes.
To terrorize other people into behaving themselves, into letting us do. We do it with the.
And
with
you think there's any difference between that and what's going on in Ferguson?
No.
No.
Not from a perspective of power relationships.
Right. Right.
That if you're a black teenager, you can still be shot down in the streets for no particular reason. But you can be shot down in the streets in this country today as a young black man for doing nothing by a cop because you're black. And that is an echo of that fascist, totalitarian, religious-based institution that used to exist called the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
That could trace its roots back to before the Republic was created, that used bombing and fear and economic weapons that again, operated with a wink and a nod to local officials, might have even been in bed, might have even been local officials. And you look at a picture of ISIS marching through cities in Iraq, and you look at a picture of the Klan marching through the capital of this country in 1928, and I'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference between the two, other than one's wearing black and one's wearing white.
Yep.
So my only point being, let's all take a little step back from our self-righteousness about the fact that Christianity is over this shit. Because Christianity ain't over this shit.
Nope.
Now, if you'd like to make the argument that those weren't real Christians, those weren't true Christians, those weren't people, that doesn't represent Christianity at all, I'm willing to accept that argument. But then you have to extend the same courtesy to other religions.
Yeah.
Now, how did the Klan survive for so long? Well, the good people didn't stand up to him, did they? How was the Klan finally stopped? Was it, did we fund the moderate rebel Klansmen like John McCain wants to do? Did it happen in a month or a year? No. We fought a bloody civil war and then had a century of skirmishes, and we're still fucked up because of the way that theology, that Confederate theology, infected everything it touched, so that even to this day, the Republican Party would not exist if they could not invoke the ghosts of American ISIS.
Right, right.
And that's all I wanted to say on the subject. It struck me as strikingly weird that nobody talked about the American Christian terrorist organization that used to rule over vast swaths of land in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, the Klan has been decimated economically by the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Exactly.
And have reformed themselves into the Patriot Movement, mm-hmm. which has exploded since 2008.
It's really?
Like 813%.
I'm shocked.
Since Barack Obama was elected president.
You mean there's a relationship between the black guy in the White House and the fact that the Patriot Movement has jumped by 800% in the last
two years? Don't tell Ann Coulter. She thinks only liberals kill presidents.
Yeah. She wrote that in a newspaper.
She wrote that in the newspaper. And
it's paid to write that in a newspaper.
I you're going to make me vomit. All right.
No, but actually, Michelle, you said Michelle Obama had the best response to her.
She did. They were talking with her in an interview about...
Michelle Obama. They were talking.
Michelle Obama was talking in an interview about, you know, the danger of Barack Obama being president. And is that a danger to his life? And she said... As a black man, he can be shot at the gas station.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Let's make a difference. I mean, I'm paraphrasing there, but she did. The direct quote was, as a black man, he can be shot at the gas station.
Yeah.
So there's somebody who's got her head in the real world.
Yeah.
And
so her
unlike other people like Ann Coulter. Okay.
Her husband is still living under the threat of violence, but has much better police protection.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, if you haven't, this is late breaking news and I don't want to break our train of thought here, but there's a wonderful video that I saw on television.
Yeah, you want talk about this and then we'll wind it up.
It was a neighborhood. It was a nice white neighborhood. An older African-American man sitting on the curb. I picked it up about halfway through and I didn't quite follow the thread, but it was him being hassled by the cops for suspected of burglary. And I watched the guy they brought on to watch the video. And I really felt his reaction, which was, please don't let this end badly.
Yeah.
Please don't let another person be gunned down on the American streets because they're black and for no other goddamn reason than they're black. Please don't let that happen again. And that didn't happen this time. But what happened was fascinating because this nice white lady who could be your mother or mine came out of her home and basically told the cops to fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
I know this guy. I've known him for years. How dare you? And she treated the police like they were her employees.
Yeah.
And how dare you? You've got the wrong address. And if he weren't black, you would never be doing this. Yeah. And on and on and on. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know what? If this were a poor neighborhood and she were at a black man coming out and confronting the cops, she might very well be dead tonight.
Yep.
But she's a nice white lady in a nice white neighborhood who knows this guy. And knows that those cops have no goddamn business hassling him just because he's black and he's sitting on the curb and he has a bag in his hand. And she has no problem going up and telling the mat, helping him to his feet, telling the cops when they order her to stop to screw themselves, and getting really, really offended when they try to tell her what to do in her own goddamn backyard.
Yep.
And I thought, there's so many...
But you know, there's so much cultural training that goes on with white people being taught... to have that authority, and men being taught to have that authority over women. And I mean, we could have 14 shows about how people are trained by our culture to submit to power.
Well, and let's be very real and very as honest as we can be as privileged white people living in the suburb.
Right.
It is not that if you were a northern young African-American man, let's say, or a teenager visiting the South.
Yep.
Your uncle didn't tell you what the rules were because he wanted you to feel oppressed.
No.
Your uncle told you what the rules were about looking at girls and where to walk and how to behave.
So you wouldn't get killed.
Exactly. It's not like it's a
and still have that get a conversation today. Absolutely.
They're responding to a real threat, lived experience. But the power dynamics in this relationship in this very short video were fascinating to watch.
And flipped.
Yeah.
In many ways.
They were completely flipped and they were...
Well, except that the policeman was an African-American woman.
I believe that's
right. Right, so...
That's right, but...
Very she's complicated.
She's this blue. Is,
yeah.
She's blue. She's the person in blue. She's the cop.
Yeah.
She's the popo. And that's all she was. Yeah. And it was a matter of... And it really reminded me, frankly, of Downton Abbey. Agatha Christie and Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
When the cops interview the mannered folks.
Right. As opposed to the servants.
They always took their hats off. They were very respectful. When you interviewed the servants, it's all right, get in here, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And it was completely different because it was a class thing.
Yeah.
And watching the class differences play out and who gets to be in power and who doesn't was very, very interesting to watch.
Agreed.
Sorry, there was a cat fight going on here again.
Well, there's a power dynamic. It's a power dynamic over there.
Yeah. Well, we have a new cat living outside our house.
Yes.
Who is
about to be adopted by someone on the street. There's an extraordinarily friendly black cat. Do adopt black cats if you're going to adopt a cat. Yeah. They're the last ones to be adopted, and they are just so wonderful. We love our black cat. He is just fantastic.
But there was his mirror opposite living just beyond the force field known as the front door for a very long time. For a few days. And we have three kids who were naming the cat.
Naming the cat.
And coming up with scenarios where it was really kind of impossible not to adopt this cat, who we will now call Twilight.
Twilight, yes. Named by the 12-year-old.
So there's the normal cat duopoly in the house has been slightly disrupted by the presence of a third cat and the fact that we are usually the cats don't get locked into our studio space.
Yeah.
One's outside, one's inside. They're both inside now and they're being driven mad by the nice weather.
Speaking of cats.
Yeah.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty or more than one internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitties, plural, are Cat Scabies and Princess Monster Truck. Okay.
I'm sorry. I was having a face down, a Sergio Leone style face off with the black cat. I drew my bottle, and he just sat there looking at me like, go ahead.
You're gonna squirt me? Yes.
Go ahead.
Cat Scabies and Princess Monster Truck do not snuggle together very often. But just for you listeners, there is a picture of them lying on the same chair at the same time. Don't miss it.
Look shop.
No, it's not a Photoshop. You can meet them at our Facebook page and website. You can send your internet kitties to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Even when you align me with people that I have never been aligned with before in my life.
Uh-huh.
And I need to tell people to get out and vote and support the president more. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. And you want to wish a happy birthday to a family member?
I do. To my bro.
Yeah.
My brother. My actual biological brother, who's one of the coolest people I have ever known.
And this week's is also the birthday of my stepdaughter, who lives in Sweden. So happy birthday to her.
We have many birthdays this month.
October is a big month for birthdays. July is also, but October is a big month for birthdays.
Apparently February is a big month for making babies.
All these Valentine's Day babies out
which
there.
Which makes perfect sense. It's cold, it's dark, there's nothing else to do.
And it's Valentine's. Exactly. Yep. So Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties wonder if Mike Huckabee leaves the Republican Party over gay marriage. Isn't that starting a three-way?
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
All right, Science Fiction University. Yes.
Yeah, we're going to do Science Fiction University. It is courtesy of our friend Frank, who sent it to us while we were recording last week's podcast.
Hey, Frank.
At that point. So that is kind of cool. And thank you very much, Frank, for sending these. What he sent us is the first lines of some science fiction books, stories, or novels.
Ooh.
And you have to tell me the name of the book and the author if you know it. But most cases, I think if you know the book, you'll know the author. They're all pretty well-known stories. Uh-huh. All right?
All right.
All right. Number one.
Crap.
We slept in what had once been the gymnasium.
That would be a boy and his dog.
Are you going to say a boy and his dog for every one of these?
No. But I will say a boy and his dog.
That is The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood.
All right, fine. That would be my second guess. A boy and his dog does have a scene in a gymnasium.
Number two.
Yes.
It's going to be a wide elliptical Earth orbit, Judith Hoffman said.
Oh, hell if I know.
Eon by Bear. Last name Bear.
Greg Bear.
Greg Bear. Okay. Yeah. Frank only gives us the last name, so some of these I don't know. I don't know Greg Bear's work. But...
Greg Bear's very good. Very good.
All right.
I should know that, and I feel ashamed.
Number three. Uh-huh. It was a bright, cold day in April, and the clocks were striking 13.
That's 1984 by George Orwell.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Number four. A beginning is the time for taking the most delicate care that the balances are correct.
See, that sounds really familiar. That sounds like something that would be the beginning of Dune.
It is Dune.
Yeah!
Good. Very good. All right. Number five. Far out.
By Frank Herbert.
By Frank Herbert. Yes. Number five. Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun.
That could very well be The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Thank you very much.
Douglas Adams.
Yeah. All right. You're going to get this next one.
Okay.
Once upon a time, there was a Martian named Valentine Michael Smith.
Oh, come on. Come on.
All right, we move on.
Robert Heinlein, Stranger in a Strange Land.
Right, yes. No bonus points on that one.
No.
All right, we're on number seven. It was a pleasure to burn.
That would be Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight has some misspellings in it, but they are intentional.
Okay.
I just tell you that.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Can you guess what it is without me reading it?
Flowers for Algernon?
Yes.
Okay. Good. I am living my misspent youth as we sit here.
Dr. Strauss says I should write down what I think and remember and everything that happens to me from now on.
Yeah.
And there are several misspellings in there.
That was a shot in the dark, but okay.
Yep, very good.
Wonderful. Right. Wonderful book. Wonderful book.
Number nine. A merry little surge of electricity, piped by automatic alarm from the mood organ beside his bed, awakened. And I'm not going to say the name of the character because that will totally give it away.
Was it? This, I'm guessing it is. It's the parallel of 1984. It's Brave New World.
No, this.
No.
The name of the character beside his bed awakened Rick Deckard.
Do androids dream of electric sleep?
Correct.
Sheep. Okay.
Philip K. Dick, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep,
mm-hmm.
which became Blade Runner.
Okay. Yeah. After losing about 50% of the story.
Yeah.
But that's
if
okay.
You would know Deckard, you would know what story it was.
That was all good. Right. Just good withholding.
All right. Tonight, we're going to show you 8 silent ways to kill a man.
I don't know. It sounds really familiar, though.
It is The Forever War.
Oh, is that Joe Haldeman?
Yep.
Yeah. Good book.
All right. And the last one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Thanks, Frank. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. This is an old book. But let's see if you can get this one. This is written from memory, unfortunately.
War of the Worlds?
Good guess. No, it's Herland, 1915.
Oh.
By Charlotte Perkins Gilman.
Wow. I don't think I ever read that.
Utopian feminist fiction, from 1915.
It's something that my 20-year-old self might have avoided.
Well, maybe. I read it, and it's a society composed entirely of women who reproduce via parthenogenesis.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah, I've gotten a little more enlightened since I was in my 20s.
There were a lot of interesting utopian novels written at that time.
Yeah.
All right.
One day we shall have to do a show about whatever happened to Utopia.
I think we do that every show.
I think you're right.
Hey, thank you very much, Frank.
That was a blast.
Dog-Faced Herman has been really busy this week sending us audio clips. We encouraged him with our asking for more music. So he has sent us a lot of music, and we will be using that in the coming weeks.
Wow. We might have to rename this segment Science Fiction University with Dogface Herman.
Featuring. Because very often we do feature Dogface
Herman. The musical stylings of Dogface.
The musical. I think that's what we'll do. We'll do the musical stylings of Dogface Herman.
Well, this continues to be a lot of fun for me.
It is a lot of fun. And we certainly appreciate anyone sending us science fiction questions. We're glad to have them. And thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I love you.
Love you too.
Bye.
Bye.